Hi, you're listening to Secrets for an Inspirational Life with me, your host, Mimi Novick. I'm so happy and thrilled to have you here with me. I have created this series for all of us so we can change our world together and live a more holistic and balanced life. Together, we will share lots of inspiring stories from all walks of life, speak with leading experts, enjoy healthy living ideas, explore music and subjects that inspire each other to always have hope. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate all of you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Secrets for an Inspirational Life. How are you all today? I hope that wherever you are in the world, on this huge planet that's hurtling through the hemispheres, that you have this realization. And we're here to remind you that you are, in fact, a miracle. We are a miracle that we even exist day to day in this ever-changing world. And that is so important because we do forget. And it's something that should be at the forefront of our minds, our hearts, and our souls. We have to, and I say this to myself every day, we have to give the respect to our soul, to our heart, to follow what we were meant to do on this planet. We are here for a reason. Every single one of us is here for a different reason. But all the same, call it what you will. People call it the universe. I call it God. Has put you in this place, wherever you are in the world, at this moment, for a reason. Find your reason, and you will find the peace that you so long for. Now, I am delighted, I have to say, and very honoured to welcome my guest today, who is the rather incredible Hamid Amiri. Hamid is a respected and accomplished public speaker, yet his story started out very differently. Hamid started out as a refugee with a harrowing 18-month journey from Afghanistan to the UK. He and his family embarked on a perilous journey to seek refuge in the UK in an attempt to prolong his brother's life. Hamid has been public speaking for over 10 years, sharing his lessons learned on his journey, which has allowed him to be able to inspire thousands of people over the years, young and old, and whatever walk of life they come from. He is now an author, and he has authored a best-selling book, which has been adapted for the stage for the theatre production of The Boy with Two Hearts at Wales Millennium Centre and the National Theatre in London. Hamid's journey is a success, from not being able to speak a single word of English to being able to write a best-selling BBC4 book of the week, to appearing in articles in The Guardian, to the BBC, and the list of achievements goes on. Today, he shares his absolutely incredible story. Welcome, dear Hamid.
Thank you for having me, and that is one of the best intros I've ever had, so thank you for that too.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you. It's an absolute honour to have you here tonight, Hamid, and I simply hope that I can somehow give you the space to share your story, which is incredulous, with the world out there.
Thank you. And I think that's what I'd love to do, is be able to share my story. And to your point, people have a realization that we're all on a journey. We all have a purpose. And it's through our journeys we'll find ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. And okay, so, and I know the audience and the listeners out there know that I get absolutely overjoyed with my guests, but especially I have to say tonight, because this story for everyone out there is something that really touched me, and I really wanted Hamid to come on and share it. Because in life, we never quite know where the destination takes us. But what's important is that we have this faith and belief in ourselves, firstly and foremostly, in our spirit, that no matter what life throws at us, we can overcome it. And such is your story, Hamid. So let's go back to the beginning. Let's start somewhere. About where your life, I suppose, started.
Yeah. Should I pick when I was about 10? And then
yes,
we can
of course. Yes.
So in my head, and I always said this, I was a normal child, middle child, older brother, younger brother. I like to call myself the curious one, but my brothers would disagree. And my parents would also probably agree with my brothers. But in my head, I was a normal child. I had dreams. I wanted to be an astronaut, a footballer. There was a phase I wanted to be a doctor, and there was a phase I wanted to be a rapper. Don't ask me why. And luckily, that didn't happen. But underneath those, I never believed I'd be able to achieve any of those because of where I was living. And for me, home was Afghanistan. And just because the situation and lack of opportunity and fairness and equality, I never believed it. What I didn't expect is how that 10-year-old child perspective of life will change within a matter of days.
Where were you living at the time?
Herat, Afghanistan. So it's northwest of Afghanistan. Beautiful city with lots of cousins, uncles and aunties. Love of football. That's all I wanted to do. And yeah, bit of a troublemaker, or the curious one, as I said, I like to call myself.
And are you originally? Is your heritage from Afghanistan?
Yeah, yeah. Through and through generations, I've always been there. My grandfather and great-grandfather, yeah. Because obviously, if you look back at history with Afghanistan and, you know, kind of Persian Empire, there's been changes and all that. But yeah, always from that region.
Okay. So your family and, you know, your ancestors all came from that region, so that you had a strong connection there in any case.
Yeah, 100%. And I still do. I still, if someone says to me where you're from, even though I've been in the UK for many years, I do say Afghanistan because that's where I'm from.
Well, that's natural. I mean, I think we have to keep that wherever our ancestry is. It's so important. It doesn't matter where that is. And you have to, because that is your identity, that is your blood, that is who you are. And we should never forget who we are.
Agreed. And it's, I think I have this saying that sometimes home isn't where you are, it's who you with. And I go back and forth depending on a situation, depending where I am. But yeah, it's an interesting one because I get drawn to my home, to my city, even though I said I left home when I was about 10 years old.
It's a funny thing because you can be anywhere in the world. And I always say this, it doesn't matter where I am in the world. Somehow I don't belong anywhere, but I feel like I belong everywhere. And it's somehow a contradiction, but that's how it is. It is definitely, I think, where you feel peace, and definitely who you're with.
Oh, there you go. So my analogy that I've been saying for a while actually makes sense. Now that you've deciphered it for me in a much more profound way than my two lines. But yeah, so yeah, home Afghanistan, and then things changed within days, which was yeah, an
So what
experience.
happened?
Well, my mama was wanted a daughter, and she got three boys. She was a role model, she still is. She was a powerhouse, she still is. And she got frustrated because of the situation, because of lack of opportunity, specifically for girls. And I never forget mum saying to me and my brothers that I don't want you to grow in an environment where you think this is okay. And it was simply about equality and fairness. She said eventually, or I'm just going to stand up. And I said, I'll never forget this. I said, Mum, I'm so proud of you. Mum said, all I'm going to talk about is why everyone should have an equal voice and equal chance. And I remember this day like it was yesterday vividly. Going to local school, standing up, talking, people cheering. I think what I didn't expect is someone finding out and not agreeing with my mum's stance.
And then what happened?
Knock on a door, uncle, my dad's brother saying, an order is given. And I think at that moment, I stopped being a child because I knew we had to embark on a journey of not knowing what tomorrow would look like. Sold everything that we had. And when I say everything, I mean curtains, clothes, pillowcases, cutleries. To make the money that we'll be looking to give it to a human trafficker to kind of get us out of the city. And at the same time, my older brother Hussein, who would have been about 13, 14, he had a very rare congenital heart disease. And we knew those two places that could save his life, and that'd be UK or US. So I think within days, we were like, this is it. We just got to leave. And I've said this before. Well, I didn't realize at the time, I didn't just leave my home, my city. I left my childhood. I left my belongings. I l left my safety, my family, memories. And I didn't know the long lasting impact that will have on me. That kind of played itself out years later.
In a way, when something so drastic happens in one's life and so traumatic, time stands still. And there's a part of us, I always believe, that actually freezes. And it takes many years to thaw out, so to speak, that emotion and that feeling, especially of a child of 10.
Yeah, I like how you described that because for me, that's what it was. It just froze, and I had to be an adult because I knew what we were gonna do. I had to put my emotions away. Well, I had to lock my emotions away. I couldn't show fear because I knew my parents would be worried. I couldn't show. I wanted to scream. I wanted to cry. I want to say why, but I couldn't. And I knew I wouldn't because I knew how to do it for my family.
And where did you suddenly find that courage to not show these totally human emotions? Where does that courage come from?
That's a very interesting question. I think a combination of stuff. One would have to be my family. One would have to be faith. One would have to be acceptance. But yeah, for 18 months, all of those emotions were locked away. For 18 months, I just had to, as they say, roll with the punches. Keep my faith. Tell myself, no matter how ugly it got, I'll have to get through it because of my brother. Because he needed the safety. He needed the doctors, the medical attention. And yeah, that 18 months journey then impacted me in ways that I hadn't thought about because of the experience, because how I got passed from one person to another person like a parcel. Yeah, and it's a horrible journey to go through, but we had to go through it. It's just, it was our last resort, our only option.
And may I ask you, if, of course, it's not too difficult for you to answer this, but there's you, your father, your mother, and the two brothers.
Yeah.
And you embark upon a journey that actually takes 18 months to reach the United Kingdom. Let's fast forward that you cross the border and you get out. What was that like?
My first ever experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, when sadly we hear on the news, you know, they get here back of the lorry. That's physically how we got into UK. Back of the lorry. We knock on the lorry. A driver opens the door. He's confused. He's angry. He just says, get out the lorry. And we're somewhere on a side of the motorway in the UK. And the only indication that I knew we were in UK, we knew it was right-hand drive. So I looked at the cars. I was like, oh, Dad, we've made it. Because there were occasions that people would go into lorries and actually would come out of a different country and actually go into Turkey. For us, my first ever experience is being in that lorry for a day and a bit, needing to go toilet, and obviously I couldn't. So we formed a circle in the side of the motorway. My mum just said, I don't want to do anything with this, and she walked away. And you have me, my brothers and dad, weeing on the side of the motorway, and cars beeping. And I said to my dad, wow, they're so friendly. And I was waving back as I am performing something that I shouldn't do on the side of the motorway. That is my first ever experience. But that was me, you know, almost a 12-year-old child by that time, just being a child. So yeah, that was my that was my experience of UK. Friendly drivers beeping, but obviously now I know they'll beeping because you shouldn't be on the side of the motorway. But lessons learned. So yeah, there you go.
Well, yes, indeed. Where were you for 18 months?
Multiple countries. So
tell me a little bit about that.
So you started from Moscow. So my first ever experience out of my city, out of my country, was Moscow for six months. And
where did you stay?
In a one-bedroom apartment, which essentially the traffickers will say, look, you pay me a fee, you go on this journey, and you know, I'll pass you to my friend and my friend and friend, and they'll sort you out.
Okay, so there's one initial trafficker. There's one initial trafficker who traffics you for the whole of the 18 months.
Well, he's the, I guess, the face of it, but then he has contacts all over the locations.
There's a network.
There is a network, yeah. Mm. And we stayed in this one-bedroom apartment, I guess, in a really rough area for about 6 months. And my lunch, dinner, breakfast was stale bread at times and cheese, or call it rotten cheese, just because we didn't have the luxury or the money to go have, you know, proper food. But also we were there illegally, right? So you don't want to make any attention. Yeah. So yeah, it was Moscow for 6 months, then from Moscow, Ukraine jungle, some of the Eastern Europe's countries. We stayed in a barn. And when I say a barn, it was me, my family, and some other families. And there were animals and sheep and cows next to us, which was a very stinky experience that I never forget. And then he was Austria, Belgium, Holland, France, Germany, failed attempts. We got robbed once in Moscow. We got robbed again in Germany, this time at a gunpoint. And then I worked in a pizza takeaway shop, obviously illegally, to make some money, me and my family. So again, it was a real experience that my breakfast, lunch and dinner was pizza and I got sick of it. And then, yeah, that is a crux of so many countries along the way to before we get to UK.
Now, forgive my naivety here, Hamid, but I have to ask, and I know for people out there also will be asking for sure, but why did it take so long? Because I know, I've heard stories of where people can smuggle people rather quickly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it something to do with the budget of how much you have, or is it the circumstance? I mean, for example, why stay in Russia for so long? And why does it take, why did it take, okay, forget everyone else. Why did it take your family so long to be able to reach to the United Kingdom?
Yeah, and it's a combination of stuff. Ultimately, if you have the money, and say, look, I want to get a lot quicker, then they'll ask for a fee a lot more. And I'm assuming they'll get you there a lot quicker. But also for us, there was five of us. So when you have children, and obviously, you know, my mum, then the way they have to go about it has to be less risky and also a bigger group. All of those come into factors.
Right. And okay.
6 months in Moscow, we were essentially waiting for a call for the trafficker to say, now, you know, it's time for your next destination. And it could have been 2 months. It could have been a year. And you're just
out of your control, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Okay, understood. Now, how did you cope with your brother that was ill at the time? Did he need medical attention? Did he need any drugs? What was the story there?
So he had his medication with him. It was like one tablet to take every day to keep his heart rhythm low. And we had plenty of those because we just kind of thought, we don't know how long we're going to be on this journey. Did he have episodes along the way? Yeah. When I say episodes, essentially he would have an arrhythmia attack where his heart rate would go to 150, 160, 180, 190. And he would be there for 10, 15, 20 minutes and he would let go, or he would try to relax and he would go back to a normal rhythm. Sometimes you would pass out because obviously when your heart rate is so high, your body trying to shut down, he would have blackouts. And it's one of those things, an emotion, a heightened emotion could trigger you. So I had to be very mindful of, maybe one of the reasons that I had to kind of hide my emotions is because I was worried about my older brother.
Yes.
So yeah. I don't want him to be worried, even though I am worried, because that could trigger him having an episode. So all of those played a factor. But he was very brave. He wouldn't let on, even if he wasn't feeling well. He wouldn't let on, even if he had an episode. And there was times that I knew he would have an episode and he wouldn't tell mum and dad because he didn't want them to worry about it.
How old was he?
When we left Afghanistan, he would have been about 13, 14.
Okay. And your other brother, how old was he?
So Hesam, he's 3 years younger than me, so he would have been about 7, 6 and a half.
So not only have you got this sword over your head, so to speak, of actually being on the run, but you also have to contend with your brother that's drastically ill. So how did you do it? How did you personally do it? Day in, day out. I'm talking before you came to the UK. All of these, I don't even want to say adventures, but these tests and trials. Yeah. What kept you going?
I think for me, it wasn't about me. It was for my family. It was for my brother. So I have, and you know what? Sometimes you have a conversation that makes you think that you've not thought about before. And this is one of those moments. So I'm just going to throw out there. Okay. I think it was bigger than me, right? So I couldn't be in my head at that moment. I can't be selfish and say I'm scared and confused and why are we doing this? Because there's a bigger purpose for me. Without saying it, without breaking the so-called hierarchy, I knew I had to look after my older brother and I knew I had to look after my younger brother because he's younger than me. But I could never say to my older brother, I'm looking after you because he's my older brother. And I, you know, it's that, you know, hierarchical sort of thing that you have in a family.
Mm-hmm.
But if I look back, it was bigger than me, and I knew I had to push through. And it's something that you said is quite interesting. I think all three of us made it into an adventure. And as long as I had my family around, that's all it mattered. As long as I had my brothers around, that's all it mattered. And that journey made us a very strong, tight unit because of what we had to go through.
It is a very poignant and interesting thing that when we sometimes think of ourselves, we absolutely feel we can't do something. But when we're put in the situation where it's a life or death, literally, and life and death every single day moment, something far greater takes over. And I think that is the magic of love, because your love for your family and your brothers, especially, is what kept you going. That's what is coming through this all for me, through all the disasters and all of the horrific things. There is something quite beautiful about your heart that you were able to withstand all of this because of your loyalty and love for them.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I would die for my family, right? I'd go to hell and back for them. And for me, that's what family means, right? I think at that moment, that, you know, fight or flight moment, I just knew how to do it for them. And yeah, that's what got me through. And I think it shapes how you look at life as you grow up then, because you've been put in that situation.
Absolutely. And in these moments, let's take a moment, because you mentioned the fact that you worked in a pizza place, was it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes when we find things very difficult to live through, we think of greater things that we want to do. And it's a dream. It's something that we hold in the distance, a aspiration, a hope. In those times, Hamid, where you were working in the pizza place and you were going through all these countries and experiencing all these things, what was the one thing that you can share that kept you going mentally?
Might be more than one, so bear with me.
Okay.
I think knowing or visualizing that we will get to the safe location and we will have a good day, right? Knowing that my brother will get the medical help that he needed, knowing that we will have another chance of playing football once again, knowing that I could be a child again. I think it's knowing it, you're gonna get through it, and it's really, really tough because once you're in midst of it, you don't see it. But for me, it wasn't a day, it wasn't a week, it was 18 months, but I still had that hope that there has to be a good day, a peaceful day, a day that, you know, as I said, we'd be together and laughing and mum and dad enjoying a cup of tea while we're having a game of football. That's, I think, is a combination of stuff that got me through, and also faith, right? Because like what you said in the intro, I believe in God, my family believes in God, and I had to say, look, maybe I'm going through this trials and tribulations for a reason. Maybe it's gonna give me perspective, or maybe there has to be a reason behind it. And do you know what? Whoever is up there, I know you're gonna look out for me. I know you're gonna look after my family and my brother, and I have faith in you, and I'm just gonna keep walking forward one step at a time.
I think it's the light that is the flashlight for people. I can speak for myself that the flashlight of faith is something that can lead the way out of the most dreadful darkness that we can all experience. And I want to ask you, do you think you could have done it without your faith?
Nope. I don't even have to think or pause. Nope. No way. I think underneath all of those of love and family and unity, I think faith underpins those. So, no.
And they say one has to have faith in oneself, because unless we believe in ourselves, we can't believe in God. You know, there is a well-known mystical saying that says that unless we believe in ourselves, we can't believe in God. And I really do believe that. And I want to touch upon that because it's missing in so many people's lives that they don't believe in themselves.
Yeah.
And your story, I hope, and I'm pretty sure, will affirm this message that this astounding amount of faith in yourself that you could do this actually helped your survival.
Yeah, and I think if you don't believe in yourself, we including myself, right? We're our biggest critic. And to your point, if you don't believe in yourself, others also don't believe in you. There is that element of it too. So once you start believing in yourself and your ability and know that faith that you have in yourself, it will unlock so many doors in life and the way you see it and your perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's an important lesson, I think, for all of us. And you having gone through such a big test and a big trial is really a credit to your soul that you were able to survive in such circumstances. Really, I'm you know, when I was reading about your story, I just thought to myself, really, this is something that shows and must be told, this story, because it will help others in fighting their own battles. And so many people out there right now are fighting battles that we don't even know about.
Yeah. And I think that's the key, right? That we all are on a journey in different ways, in different shapes or form. And I think it's having that ability and having that faith and that belief that it will get better. And there's a quote that I've used before. It's not my quote. I've heard that somewhere else. Like, it's okay not being okay. It's okay to have a bad day, but don't lose the faith and the belief that it will get better, that you will achieve, that you will go on to succeed. Because if I didn't have those mindset, call it subconsciously or consciously, I wouldn't be able to keep my sanity on that 18 months to be able to cope with it.
Yes, this is a very good point, because one has to keep one's sanity at whatever age you are, and people forget that. And I think we also forget that as children, we have a very robust way of dealing with things. But as adults, sometimes we lose that ability to do that. We forget. So you get to the United Kingdom, finally, mm-hmm. and you get off the motorway. What happens then?
The first thing is we look for a local police or police station to kind of say, look, we're here as refugees. Mm-hmm. We do find the local police, and we got chucked in a cell. Not that I have any issues, because it had a thin, blue, shiny mattress that I crashed and fell asleep, and it was one of the best sleeps I ever had. And I never forget, I woke up and there were empty trays by the door, and I said, "Dad, have they brought us food?" And he was like, "No, they were here already." Clearly, he was fibbing, because they did, and he munched all the food. they got us a translator that explained the situation, why we came, you know, my brother with his condition, and then they sent us to a city called Margate in Kent, which we stayed for a few weeks.
By the sea.
And I'll never forget it. There was a track of road where it had so many arcades. And we stayed quite close to it. The sea was beautiful. I had the chance to keep winding up my younger brother and say, I'm gonna throw him off the pier. Just for clarity, that was just me messing around and being childish. but yeah, it was just nice, because we knew we'd made it. And then it was about, you know, how and who do we speak to, you know, look at my older brother and work out what was wrong with him and get him well.
And then what happened? Where did you go from Margate?
After Margate, they said to us, there's a little city that you're going to be all going to in Wales. And that was an interesting observation. And I was like, what? So are we leaving, you know, England and UK? They're like, no, it's different. It was my first ever experience of, you know, United Kingdom, and then you have obviously, you know, England and Wales and Scotland, etc. It was just a fascinating looking back now. And they drove us in a minibus with a few other groups of people who was also obviously were refugees in Cardiff. And that would have been year 2000 and end of year of 2001, I'd guess. So yeah, Cardiff was the location that was chosen for us.
And you made a home there.
We did. And I'm still in Cardiff.
And you're still in Cardiff.
Yeah, not felt the need to move. Yeah. So yeah, Cardiff became our home and still here.
But Wales is a nice part of the world.
It is. And the people.
Yes.
Very welcoming. I think it was the people, the experience, the nurses, the volunteers that allowed me to process my journey, allowed me to unravel, I guess, my trauma and be a child again. But it did take a while.
I wanted to ask you about that. When you came to England and then you went to Wales and then sort of life, the pause button came off and it became, in a way, life started again. And you went to school, I presume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And could you somehow take back any of your childhood, or was it too late for that?
I like your pause terminology, because for me, I know exact moments that I unpaused it. So first day in a local school in Cardiff, and I went straight into year eight. So I'd been about 12 years old. It was I was in a playground. There were people who actually looked like me. There was football. It was actually a very diverse school. But I didn't feel like a child. I didn't feel like I didn't belong there. Even though there was football, even though the people who looked like me or sounded like me. And it was multiple reasons. I think one of them was language, but two was, you know, to how you described it, is for me, I paused the moment that we knew how to leave, and then I unpaused it 18 months later. And in a really weird analogy, you know, sometimes when you're watching a movie and when you nod off and you're nodding off and it's only like a minute or two and you can resume and work out what's happened in the past few scenes. Well, this is almost like you nod off and then you wake up 2 hours later and it's tail end of the movie and you just can't work out what's happened. That's kind of what it was for me. So when I tried to be a child, it just wouldn't allow me. I wouldn't even trust the teachers. When the teacher was trying to tell me, how are you? How can I help you? My brain would say, people from my own place wanted to kill my mum. People along the way took advantage. They robbed us. They passed us like a parcel, one place to another. I don't know you, so why would I trust you? And that went on for 3-4 years, where I just had my guard up. I was really defensive. I got into a lot of trouble. All because I didn't know how to be a child again. So it's a very long answer to your short question. But for me, yeah, I just didn't know how.
In a way, it's like you went to sleep and woke up again and suddenly you were 12. And
exactly.
Yeah. 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 I can imagine that that is something so difficult. It's an understatement, but it's a fascinating look at the essence of a human, I think, if we look deeper into it, because you press the pause button and your childhood stood still. And yet you were still you. So who you really were still existed, but the body was of a child, of course. And the two somehow never merge again in the same way. You develop in a different way. You are more mature. You are more understanding. You can read people better, I'm sure. And your perception is clearer. With all of that and the experience of what you went through, how did you adjust into leading, in inverted commas, a normal school life as a young person.
I was smiling when you were saying those because they're very true, right? As in understanding people having different perception. At that moment when it was happening, I don't think I appreciated how much I saw the journey as a curse, but I realized actually the journey in a really, really weird way was a blessing. Because it taught me so much about resilience. It taught me so much about how much you can be pushed and how much you can, your body can cope and process. I think for me, one of the biggest things that allowed me to drop my guard was the nurses and the volunteers. The pinpoint, and I never forget this, is my older brother and me were in Southampton. He's seen as a consultant and he's telling my older brother, you be the 21st person ever, the youngest person ever to have this operation. This operation has a 60% success rate, two places in the world, Southampton and Chicago. No other place could do that. And it's like four operations in one. My brother smiled and he said, yeah, that's fine. Where do I sign? Let's get on with it. And I remember telling him, you do know what he just said. He said, yeah, but I want to get well. I will get well. I want to give back because these guys are going to save my life. He had a 14 and a half hour operation. And through that, and I guess me negotiating with God of, you know, keeping him alive and I'll be a better person, I'll lie less and be a bit of a troublemaker. But also the realization that I've been complaining about the weather, the people, the culture, the language, where all the brother had all the same challenges, but very rare congenital heart disease. So for me, something flipped at that moment that I said, come on. If he can do it, and he's been dealing with all of that, I've actually been very selfish that I've been saying to myself, I can't, and come up with every other reason. And that was a moment that a light switched in my head and my perspective changed, allowed me to look back and say, do you know what? I'm glad I went through that journey and that trials and tribulations, because the way you described it, which was spot on, I do understand people so much more. I do have different perception and reading situation. And that has played a huge factor today and will keep going because that's part of me now.
A pivot point. I think we all have a pivot point. And yours was, what can I say? Life changing. But as you were talking about your brother, something kept coming to my mind, and that was that it was really a way that your brother somehow, on so many different levels, saved all of your lives. And he didn't know it. But it was really, I think, because of him and the condition that he had, that quite possibly, you know, I'm a great believer in destiny, and I do believe that we are put together with people, family, friends, strangers, for a reason. Could it be that this was sort of the promise that you made to each other before you came to this earth? That in fact, your dreams of being an astronaut you had big dreams. And to be able to fulfill big dreams, you have to have big tests.
I've never looked at it that way, but I would agree. And I 100% agree with the way you described my older brother, because knowing or not knowing, he played a profound role in my life, and the way he handled himself, the way he looked at life. I think he taught me so much that we don't know what's around the corner. He taught me so much that live your life to the fullest while helping others. He taught me so much about perspective. And yeah, he still does. He still does in different ways.
So what a remarkable man he is as well, in the sense that he made a sacrifice of sorts that you now can do what you're doing, and your family, because they've all got their own vocations in life. But today we're talking about you, Hamid, and look at how he has touched you in such a way, so deeply, that you are now leading this life of where you change the lives of other people. So it's a huge endeavor that you've embarked upon.
And I feel like it's just a beginning off that journey.
I could say so much more. It's an absolutely, I haven't even words for the bravery that your family and yourself have shown. And even, I want to bring it now, there's so much more, I know. But I know there is. I'm convinced. And I could have you back on again and we can talk about it again, because it is such a profound story, an absolutely profound human story. But let's bring it. It's a good time now to bring it to today. What are you doing today? Because you're an author, you're a motivational speaker. You do work in all sorts of places to help other people. But tell us in a nutshell where all this journey has brought you at this moment in time.
I think for me, and by the way, I'm open to come back again, right? Because it's been a revelation, even kind of just hearing your perspective and food for thought.
You're welcome. So, you're welcome.
So you've got that, right?
Yes.
For me, I'm at the stage in my life where I've had so much time to reflect back and understand the decisions I've made, the actions that I made, and kind of the journey that I had to go through to who I am today. And what I simply like to do, and have been doing, and I'd love to carry on doing, is share my story to give people hope, people perspective, tell people that Hamid, who failed his A-levels, who couldn't speak English, went on to get a job, get a degree. So I challenge everyone else to do have crazy dreams, have self-belief, never give up. So yeah, I feel like I'm on a journey where I simply want to inspire thousands, millions. And if I get hit by the bus tomorrow, or 6 weeks later, or 60 years later, I want people to say, do you know what? He made an impact. You know, I don't want people going to go, yeah, he was a hardworking, cheeky chap. That's completely fine. But I want to leave something behind that I know I've impacted and left this place a better place. So, yeah, I feel like that's my purpose.
And you have a powerful voice. And the world is your platform in fact, because I know that I mentioned at the beginning, you have a best-selling book. Tell us a little bit. It's called The Boy with the Two Hearts, is it?
Yeah, The Boy with Two Hearts, which is a reference to my older brother, Hussein, due to his obviously heart condition. Wrote that in 2018, got published in 2020. Play, which is crazy to even say as we speak, went into Cardiff, went in National Theatre, and as we speak, it's running in Athens. And I've been told a few other locations too, and I'd love to actually turn this into a TV versions of it. And I've already had this visualization, the thumbnail on Netflix, and I go to mum and dad, mum, there's your story, there's your son's story. And that's what drives me, to be able to share my family story, but more specifically my older brother's story, because he was and is my role model, my best friend, and someone that I always looked up to.
How beautiful, really. And your success, congratulations, by the way. I think people who do wonderful things deserve congratulations, and they deserve to be told that. You know, if you see something beautiful or see someone beautiful, tell them. It's so important. I'm a huge believer in that. And a film would be good, or a TV program, that would be wonderful as well. And I know you want to tell your story. Everyone wants to tell their story. This is the point. And that's one of the secrets of life, is that storytelling is so powerful. It can change lives. And I make reference to this many times in my work, and I've done it also here on the podcast with my guests, that in the grand times of before, storytelling was used in so many different ways. And it's something that is so powerful, because the storytellers are the most powerful people. They can change minds. They can change hearts. And I think this is what you can do, is it's more than just telling your story. You're actually being used as a vessel to change the hearts of people.
Love that. I'm going to use that next time when someone says, tell me about yourself.
Well, it's true. It's true. And my grandfather always used to say to me, take your position. And I would say, what do you mean, take my position? I don't understand. Had a very strict upbringing, and he was military sort of minded, let's put it that way. And he believed in discipline. And he would say, take your position. What does that mean? And he would say to me, well, unless you take your position, you don't know what you're doing in life. Stand and be counted. And that's what I would say to you, Hamid, is take your position, because you have the power to change lives. Because there is no way on this earth that you have gone through what you have gone through, that people couldn't maybe in 10 lifetimes go through, unless you had a bigger purpose.
I love that, and I agree. And I'm gonna take you up on it and try to amplify my voice. And I guess this is one way, right, to be sharing this with your amazing platform and your audience. I'm gonna take your word for it. I'm gonna amplify it as much as I can, and hopefully, when people get to read the book, they get
where
a chance.
Where can they buy the book?
Amazon is probably the easiest one. If you just put the way we're too harsh in Amazon, it should just come up. Waterstone, all major online booksellers would have a copy. It should have a copy. So yeah, there you go.
Okay, and what about people who want to find out more about your work? Because you do motivational speaking as well.
I do, yeah. The easiest way is through my Instagram or my Twitter or X, whatever we call it these days. Easiest way, and it sounds really weird, if you Google Hamid Amiri, it should link up to all the social accounts that I have. It's hamid.amiri1989 and hamidamiri1989, depending which one it is. But the easiest way is have a look online. You should be able to find my name on my social media. And I tend to want to, document is the wrong word, I want to share my journey as I'm going through this, right? And the journey continues. Just to give an insight to people and hopefully inspire people that, to your point, everyone has a voice, everyone's on a journey. It's pausing, reflecting, knowing what your purpose is and process it and be okay with it and turn that into something that drives you. It's been an absolute pleasure. I should also say a big thank you to you as well as a host.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure, really, Hamid. And I wish you all the very best, sincerely, in everything that you do. I hope that this is just another beginning for you, and an endless beginning, in fact, for better and bigger things, and that you emerge a shining light for people who are too afraid, who have lost their voice. May you encourage them and remind them of their own voice.
Thank you so much.
Come again. And we can continue. It's been really an honor to have you to share such a deeply, deeply moving story.
Thank you for having me. And I'm going to hold you to it, I promise.
All right, then. Take care of yourself.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Hamid Amiri. Incredible story. And one that shows us the resilience of the human spirit. Do something beautiful for yourselves. Life is for you. And it is a journey that can take us to many different places. But ultimately, let us be brave. Thank you for joining me, as always. And until next time, look after yourselves, do beautiful things, and lots of love.
Thank you for listening to Secrets for an Inspirational Life, brought to you by your host, Mimi Novik. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast and see you in the next episode. For more information about Mimi Novik and her books, music, and inspirational work, take a look at her website, www.miminovik.co.uk.